welcome, welcome. How's everybody feeling today?
Great, Pastor. I'm glad to be at church. I could be at home in my bed right now.
Well, welcome. Just to kind of, I know it's I thought it was hilarious that Carl called it Snowmageddon. I found myself incredibly grateful for something I never thought I'd be grateful for. Someone from Ohio this morning. And I'm a Clemson fan, so I'm bitter. But, you know, here, I got this picture this morning of Dwayne Miller doing something. Maybe not. Nope. Oh. Fake out. I had a picture, but I lost it. And this picture was of Dwayne. And if you don't know anything about Dwayne, Dwayne is from Ohio. And he had the forethought to actually come over here early this morning and put out a bunch of salt on our thing and shoveled all that out there. And I just want you to know, that's the directional team that leads this church. That is one of the guys. And you should be proud of the church. Yeah, that's a good thing. And it was just one of those moments where I was like, man, I'm so glad to be a part of our church, just because there's that servant heart, and that's just one story, I'm sure, of many. And so I was curious, so tonight's a big day. Today's a big night, which is the Super Bowl, right? Do we have any Super Bowl fans out there? Yes, okay. How about any Bucks fans? All right, so y'all are all Chiefs fans? Okay, y'all just lied to me. Y'all said y'all were all Super Bowl fans, and then no one raised their hands. This is a little interaction right here. So anyways, I hope you enjoy the game that no one seems to enjoy. So I'm excited to start this series, and I'm excited because a little bit of this one is going to actually fly through some history. So if you're a person that's like, I don't like history, welcome. This is a great place to take a nap. That's all I can really tell you. But I think it's going to be one of those fun series to actually go through. And when I was a kid, I lived for the weekends. I was consistently thinking about which friend's house I would go to. And most of the time, I was thinking about what we were going to do once we got to that friend's house. And I'll be honest, most of the time, it involved being in a creek somewhere or doing something outside. And the worst possible thing that could happen to me when I was a kid was I would not have a friend's house to go to. And because what that meant is I was going to be locked up in my house doing nothing, and it was truly terrible. I remember that Saturdays like this would drag on and what felt like forever, and honestly, this is one of the things, this is like torture. Like, parents, you should make sure you get rid of your kids every weekend because they just need to be out about all that type of thing. And I just remember thinking, this is the worst possible punishment that I could possibly experience as a kid. Nowadays, I find myself regularly wishing I had taken more advantage of the Saturdays where I had absolutely nothing to do. Am I right? Yeah, a couple head nods, great. I'm trying to wake y'all up. I know it's Cracker Barrel season. And this is kind of what I'm getting to. Most of us would agree that it's easier to look back and say things were better then. Things were better when I had more time. Things were better when I was less busy. Things were better when I didn't have this responsibility in my life, didn't have to deal with this issue. Things were better when I was younger on TV, in my schools, whatever it is, that we would come to this point where we could say, you know, things were better back then or during a simpler time. And most recently, I discovered this. I didn't do this in school, but, you know, this is cool. Kids are actually looking back in a very unique way right now. So apparently, there's this cool holiday called the 100 Days of the School Year. Anybody know anything about this? Well, apparently, some people had some wise ideas like, well, let's just dress our children up as old people, which is hilarious to me. And I actually found some pictures this past week of some kids dressed as old people. Carl, he found a picture of you. This is one. Now pause. Now, the parents' attention to detail is just astounding to me. They put wrinkles on their children, which is just amazing. Here's another one. See, there's the wrinkles I'm talking about. At first, I thought they were trying to give her stitches on her mouth. I was like, what's going on here? And here's some local ones. Wait, scared you. Anybody know who this is? This is actually one of our kids. How about the next one? Nailed it. Now, I just want to make a note. Level of sock control, level of waist control. So, I just thought this was just a funny thing. And I share all this to say, this whole looking back business, isn't there a part of you that wants the generation behind you to experience all the good things that you experienced as a kid, right? We could probably come to some term on that. And to a point, we would also even say that we wish the generation behind us, we could actually protect them from some of the things that we experienced as a kid. And growing up, my grandmother, she was a big fan of Calvin and Hobbes. If you know what Calvin and Hobbes is, it's a wow. Praise the Lord over in the corner. And if you don't know what Calvin and Hobbes is, they did little comic strips. And if you don't know what a comic strip is, it's not like Spider-Man or anything like that or what we do now. They had these things called newspapers. And they would put them in there, and they were always just these short little clips. And the comic strips for Calvin and Hobbes always took these huge adult ideas and simplified them in a way to where how a kid would explain it. And it was always so insightful. The wit and cleverness of these comics always just was like an aha moment as I read some of these. And Bill Walterson actually said this. He's the author of Calvin and Hobbes, and he said this about change. Do you know what's weird? Day by day, nothing seems to change. But pretty soon, everything will be different. And this is true with every generation, right? They do things differently than the previous generation. I heard someone wise once say that the only constant in life is change. And for people that don't like change, this is going to be a comforting sermon for you this morning. God knew this. He actually worked it into the cycles of all things, the change of seasons, the change of growing up. And God knew this with his creation, that everything would eventually change. He even had a vision for the local church that the older generation would actually rub off on the younger generation, and all of us collectively together would actually change to be more and more like Jesus. And if we were to zoom out a little on our culture and our society and take a look at the landscape that's actually before us, we could probably highlight pretty quickly some things that are fractured or divided in our current culture and society, especially among the different generations. We can get on social media. We can actually read the news about this. We can walk into our schools even and see a divide between different generations pretty quickly. And just to be forward, I do not want this for our church. I am confident that if we can actually get to know one another better, we can actually love each other better. Because in reality, all of us, we need each of us. All of us, we need each of us. So for the next few weeks, we're going to take a different look at all these generations that have come up. And for the next few weeks, we're going to see how they play a crucial part in his kingdom to come, not just in my life or in your life, but also just in reality, the community we have the privilege of actually being in. Now, just go ahead and get it out there. I'm a part of what's called the millennial generation. And the millennial generation, we have not gotten a good name for ourselves. And that's probably fair. But I have found a video to kind of highlight the extreme of what the millennial generation looks like. Millennials, I'm so sorry. I'm about to call us on some few things. So this is a video I found this past week.
Technology, that's very good. Are you adept at Excel?
No.
PowerPoint?
No.
Publisher?
Not really.
Exactly in what area of technology are you proficient?
Snapchat, Pinterest, Instagram, Vine, Twitter, you know the big ones.
I'm surprised you didn't say Facebook.
That's for old people, like my parents. That's funny.
Well, Amy, when you're working for me, you have to have those kind of research skills, because I'll send you things for you to comb through and get the answers and send them to me. So for that, you've got to be really good at technology.
For stuff like that, no problem. I'll just ask Siri.
You'll just ask Siri?
You know, Siri tell me this, Siri find me that. We're all good getting you the answers.
Tell Siri I want you ready to go at 8 sharp each and every morning.
I don't understand.
What don't you understand?
What you just said.
You don't understand be ready to go?
No. You said 8, right?
Yes.
8, like in the morning, 8?
Yes, in the morning.
Yeah. That kind of doesn't work for me. Who gets up at 8?
I do.
I Skype with my French boyfriend in Paris until like 3 in the morning. I don't even get to Starbucks until like 10, where I order my grande chai tea latte, 3 pumps, skim milk, light water, 2% foam, extra hot, but not too hot. So if it's okay, I work best in the morning at 10:45.
Wow. Amy, I don't think we're going to be a good fit.
Why are you so negative? I can sense your hostilities, and right now I am not feeling very safe. I've been here for over 5 minutes, and the only nice thing you have said to me was nice resume, which I typed all night for this meeting with you. You've given me no guidance, no validation, no encouragement, no supervision. Is there an HR director somewhere?
HR director?
Yes, I need to speak to someone. I may have to take off today as a mental health day.
Take the day off, you... Amy, look at me. You don't work here.
Are you firing me?
Okay, yes.
So on behalf of my generation, I'm so sorry. Thankfully, this is not all of my generation. This is just an extreme, but it does give us some insight into some important things that we're going to take a look at in the next couple of weeks about millennials. And before we get there, there's actually a few generations we're going to stop by up until that point. So in our current day and age, we would say somewhere around we have 4 for sure generations and a 5th generation that's actually rising up right now. And you can on a regular basis bump into these 4 generations, and you rub shoulders with the generation that's coming up. And so here's the first one. So the builders, they were considered 1925 to 1945. Any builders in the room this morning? It's cold out. Y'all are typically at home like this type of thing. Yeah. So we got some builders. Then we have the boomers, 1946 to 1964. Any boomers in the room? All right. Oh, this is going to be interesting. Generation X. So this is 1965 to 1980. Any Generation Xers in the room? Yeah, wow, represent. And then we have the millennials, 1981 to 1996. That's my generation. Yeah. Now, here's the rising generation. This is Generation Z, and there's a lot of interesting things that are coming out. They started in 1997. Any Generation Zs out there? High and proud, guys, high and proud. And I say all that to say the future of our church looks bright because of you guys. Hey. Wow. I believe in you. Obviously, back corner doesn't. The builders are often referred to as the greatest. Almost said something I shouldn't have said there. The greatest generation, and that's for incredibly good reason. They didn't just live through the Great Depression or World War II. They actually thrived in the midst of it during a time when conflicts were on the horizon and in multiple different ways. This generation bent down and leaned in and charged in a way we honestly have not seen since. And just to give you a quick snapshot of this generation and what they went through, they didn't just go through the Dust Bowl alone, which would have been considered a hard time. We have a picture of this. This is one of the snapshots of the Dust Bowl. The Dust Bowl was a result of a population push that went out west, and it combined poor farming techniques that resulted in a vast famine. So lots of people, poor farming techniques, and then all the few other things that came around with that. Combine that with the fact that there is this wind that would whip across the prairies. It would unsettle crops. It would stir dust everywhere. Oftentimes, these giant dust clouds were referred to as black blizzards. I'll be honest, as I was looking into all this, I didn't realize it was that significant. And it would cover towns, unsettle crops. It would create food shortages as a result. And then you couple that with the fact that there was a giant stock market crash in 1939 causing the Great Depression, and it would cause many to become unemployed. And during that same time, it would hurt the common farmer in ways that they would feel for generations after that. On top of that, if you were to take the Great Depression, during that time, unemployment rose to 30%. To put that in perspective, during the pandemic, the highest unemployment rate was 12.7%. Further perspective, 2008, the housing crisis, that was only 10%. 30% of the country found themselves without a way to make money. Understandably, these experiences resulted in an approach to life in the collection of things. I remember being at my grandmother's house when I was younger, and she had these little side tables to her bed. And I remember going into one of them, opening the doors, and looking inside and seeing jars of buttons. And I was like, what in the world would you use all these buttons for? And I remember dumping them all over the floor. She didn't like that. But you know, I just remember like, why would you have all these buttons? And I remember going through my grandfather's garage. He was a mechanic. And it was almost more of a museum because you could see car parts from almost every single car that he ever worked on. It was almost like he was collecting them for all kinds of reasons. You want to know why this is between those two? It's because of they always would give me this statement. You never know when you might need it. Anybody ever heard that? That growing up during a time without resulted in never getting rid of anything because they could actually remember a time when they had nothing. And then on the heels of the Great Depression, World War II broke out. America was actually stuck between two major wars, one in the East and one in the West. And in this side of this war, somewhere around 80 million people would actually lose their lives as a result of this war. My grandfather, as I said, was a mechanic, and he served in that war. And one of the things we learned quickly not to do with him is, you know, if we were to talk about the idea of buying a foreign-made car, this was a no-no. You don't do that. If you say, hey, Toyota's good, he would look at you and almost tell you his entire World War II experience on why Toyota was not a good thing. And he would say, you better not do it. You buy American. That's what he would tell me. And the reason that they were called the builders was quite literally after saving the world, they came back and they actually built the country that we now enjoy. They built roads and hospitals and schools and power grids. They built the homes that Chip and Joanne now love to renovate. They harnessed atomic energy. They developed vaccines that would actually save millions in lives. And just to put icing on the cake, they decided to put a man on the moon. Generations after them, in comparison, have built nothing. We are building heavily on what they had built before us. Not to mention they left behind an incredible musical legacy of like Ella Fitzgerald and Bing Crosby. And if I were to give you a couple words to describe this generation, the first one I can really highlight quickly is that it was practical. They're incredibly practical people. It is not uncommon for this generation to spend very little and save a lot. That same thrift actually applies into how they make decisions. They think within mind of what being prepared for what's to come. And this same thrifty mind also created this deep level of generosity. If they thought that you really needed it, they would literally give you the shirt off their back. This comes from a place where they deeply value relationships and those around them. And in their relational, quite simply because, you know, a great example of this is when I would go to my grandmother's house, one of the first things she would ask me walking in the door was, are you hungry? This is the generation that would sit you down in the living room and say, hey, here's a slice of pie, a cup of coffee. And they would listen. This is the generation that loves to laugh and to talk, and it's one of the generations that has the gift of lingering, which is the ability to not rush a moment, to sit where you are and to settle in it, to be a part of it. And if you ever get to talk to someone, you don't ever feel like, you got to get out my door. They're incredibly disciplined. They don't waste time. And this is the one thing that you could not say about this generation is that they are lazy. It even applies to their morality. And this is in a good way, but everything down would be black or white or cut and dry. And this is in a very, very good way. This generation, if you ever get a chance to talk to them, is incredibly proper. Listen to how they talk. Watch how they dress. This is a very dignified generation. The last words that we could use to actually encompass all of these things is that they're loyal. This would be the best way to describe them because, for the most part, this generation has been faithful. They've been faithful to their marriages. They've been faithful to their careers, and they've been faithful to this country. And just to say this, and on behalf of the other generations that are here represented, I just want to say thank you. Because of your sacrifice and what you've done, you've set the stage for us. And that has been a blessing for us. And so for the boomers or the builders, I felt I wanted to say thank you for them. So can we give a hand for them real quick? Is that all right? Now, I realize it was like two of y'all in the room, but I still felt that that was important. So now that we got a little bit of a framework for the builders, here's a question for us. How do we maximize the strength of each generation for the glory of God and the good of others? How do we maximize the strength of each generation that is currently taking up seats in our church this morning for the glory of God and the good of others? There's this strange passage, and I've always wondered at one point I will get a chance to actually talk about this. Well, today's the day. I am actually very excited to share about this one because it is a bizarre passage, and hopefully y'all come back next Sunday. So here's the passage, and you'll see what I mean. Before you kind of read it, I will say this. There's a difference between prescriptive and descriptive passages, and what I mean by that is prescriptive is something we look to as something we want to put on our lives. Does that make sense? And descriptive is something more, here's what happened. So you probably shouldn't take this home with you and say, I'm going to start living my life this way. And it'll make sense here in a second. From there, Elijah went up to Bethel. As he was walking along the road, some boys came out of the town and jeered at him. Get out of here, Baldy. Like I said, descriptive, not prescriptive. They said, get out of here, Baldy. He turned around, looked at them, and called down a curse on them in the name of the Lord. Then two bears came running out of the woods, mauled 42 of the boys, and went out to Mount Carmel and returned from Samaria. Weird passage, right? Some of y'all are like, where would he go with this? And the thing is, like I said, it's an incredibly strange passage, but there are two important themes that we could pull from this very quickly. And the themes are respect and resentment. The younger kids are far from respecting the older, and the older is actually resenting them for it. And this tension between the two, that's not a new thing inside of our culture. Our history books are actually filled with similar stories of moments like this. Creed Black, he was actually one of the executives for the Chicago Daily newspaper, and he quoted Plato when he said this, "What is happening to our young people? They disrespect their elders, they disobey their parents, they ignore the law, they riot in the streets and inflamed with wild notions, their morals are decaying. What is to become of them?" And so we can quickly see that this tension of respect and resentment, it is not a new thing to us. So it leads to this question, what do we actually do with this as a church? This is a picture of Spencer and Rosalind. Spencer was an aspiring rapper, and Rosalind was an 81-year-old widower. And these two actually met on a game called Words with Friends. Anybody ever heard of that? It's like Scrabble on your phone, yeah? Everybody under millennials just said, yeah. And they actually met there. And they would regularly play each other. They actually, in the article, it said that they had played this game some 300 times against each other, which is an astounding number because I can barely get through one game of that stuff. And through this, they develop a good friendship. To a point, Spencer decided one day that he actually wanted to take her out to dinner. And so he actually drove some 1,000 miles from New York City down to Florida where she was. And this is actually a picture of when they met. Here's the thing. We don't just need more stories like that. We need more people like that. Younger people who are willing to build a friendship with those that are older than them. And older people willing to listen and to pour into younger. You know, the thing that he highlighted, one of the reasons he wanted to come down and actually meet her face to face, she encouraged him. And through that encouragement, she gave wisdom into his life, which inspired him to drive 1,000 miles to just take her out to dinner. James Wilder highlights some themes that each of us experience in our lives when it comes to actually growing up. See if this is actually true for you. So in our 20s, it's referred to as the season of preparation. You start a job, you begin a family, you get married, you lay the foundations for the rest of your life. In your 30s, it would be considered like the season of initiation. We're now comfortable in our own skins. We actually know who we are, and we know what our role and our function and our purpose is. 40s and 50s would be considered the season of domination. That's the best way I could describe that, and that's what he described it as. So if you're like 40s and 50s, yeah, domination. And this is when we're actually most productive. We actually begin to see the fruit of our labor. We recognize that there are actually good things we can actually give our lives to. The 60s is the season of consolidation. You've seen it all. There is no tricking you. You're done messing around, and you find yourself almost streamlining your time and your resources and even your relationships. And then 70s and 80s would be the season of validation. You've lived so long, and you have very little runway left. And so now you're finding yourself looking back to, what do I have left? You start asking the question of, what's my legacy? What am I going to be leaving behind? What am I going to be remembered for? In Job 12:12, he highlights this. He says, wisdom belongs to the aged, understanding to the old. And if I were to say something about the builder generation, I would say that you have something that our society needs desperately, and that's wisdom. You've lived through all those decades, and you can now do something that many of us in this room can't do, which is you can look back and you can say, do that. Here's why. Don't do that. Here's why. And I think it would be wise for us to listen to you. Why is this such a big deal? Well, I'm in the season where I'm realizing I want my kids to be around older and wiser people. Why? Because I want their relationship with Jesus to rub off on them. And the thing is, it's not just the builders who should be doing this either. So the question for us all would be, are we putting ourselves in a place to rub off on other people as believers? For many years, I had the privilege of working with student ministry, and I remember the guy that I used to serve with or whatever, he took all his volunteers to this book called The Master Plan of Evangelism. And I was relatively new to faith at this time, but I knew I wanted to follow Jesus, and so it was kind of like a big learning curve for me, and so all that type of thing. And he had the whole volunteers go through this book, and this book was incredibly formative to how I think, mainly because it focused so much on relationships. And to a point, it inspired me to gather 13 middle school boys. I was serving in the youth ministry, 13 middle school boys, and I would take them camping. Now, if you've ever taken any middle school boy camping, it's an experience all on its own. The adventure level would double every single time we went camping. To a point, this group of boys said, we're going to start bringing airsoft guns. I didn't know any better. I'm so sorry. But I said, yeah, that sounds great. And I have this vivid memory of laying down next to the fire on my sleeping bag, fire's to my left, and I'm looking up at the trees, and I'm watching the stars, because they're running around the woods doing that with the airsoft guns, and I'm just looking at the stars, and then I hear this. Ka, 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 ka. Ow! And that, every moment of that, and I just remember laughing to myself, and I was like, I wonder where he got hit. I probably shouldn't have said that, but you know, it was one of those moments. But here I say all that, say this. Without fail, every single time, a parent would come to me after one of our camping trips, and they would say something to the effect of, you have no idea what this means for me and my kid. And I'll be honest, I really didn't. Like I had no clue. And they would tell me about how the conversations that we had about faith around the fire that night was being played out around the dining room table. And I didn't understand the significance of that. I was just trying to be obedient at the time. I didn't know how the Lord was using me in those ways. This is a picture of Harb Bowman. No one knows him. He's not an author. He's not a famous person or anything, but this is his wife, Robin. Harb Bowman just celebrated his 75th birthday this past year, and he took a major risk on me. Early in my 20s, I found myself trying to figure out what I was supposed to do with my life because, you know, that whole season of initiation or whatever. And I found myself wanting to be obedient, and I didn't know what to do with my whole faith thing, and I found myself being prompted by the Lord to actually go and serve with them. And they were missionaries up in the Bronx, New York. And one of the things I remember about him is his simple faith. We would sit on the couch and watch Yankees games because I didn't know any better at the time. And we would just watch these games, and I would just ask him questions about faith, and he would give these simple answers that just was like, is it really that simple? And I reflect back on many of those conversations nowadays as incredibly formative. And I say all this to say this. One of the things I think our culture is lacking is these multi-generational interactions. Having our kids in here, that's great, but it's so much bigger than that. It's so much bigger than just one moment. And honestly, I wonder if it's one of the reasons we're unraveling at the seams. This is one of the reasons why we ask everyone at Lifeline to find a place to serve. Even our teens. That we actually believe that when we put teens and older folks together, they get something they don't get in the world right now. That's from kids to youth to anything adult, whatever we do, to yard work in our communities, anything. Putting different generations is important and crucial to actually build our faith. And I will say this. If you're currently sitting on the sidelines right now with this, I encourage you, get up off the bench on this one. There are generations that are in desperate need of you in a lot of different ways. And I can hear it because I've sat there. Pastor, you don't know what I've done, or I don't feel good enough to be a good enough Christian to actually pour into someone's life. And then maybe, and that's fair. That probably is fair. But if you've ever felt forgiveness, if you've ever given grace or received mercy or pursued God in any way, there are younger people that don't know any of that. And they have questions whether they recognize it or not right now. They don't know how to forgive their dad. They don't know how to show grace because all they ever grew up in was to look after yourself. And here's the kicker. We need to go after them. We need to. They're not going to come to you all the time. We have to be intentional. We have to spot those moments where that kid's asking for more than what he's really asking for. We have to move to that. If I can speak to all the kids in the room, students, you know, everyone under the Gen Z thing. You're young today. But there's a day coming when you're going to slow down. You're going to have those aches and pains you hear your parents complain about. Your hearing's going to go. But if there's one thing the older generation has that we do not have, that's wisdom. It's divine perspective. And regularly placing yourself around a generation that's older than you might be one of the best things that you could ever do for your life. Titus 2 echoes this exact same thought. Paul actually encourages older men and older women to invest in the younger generation. Here's a dream. I've often wondered, I've actually been amazed by this, how many people in our church are business savvy? Like they run a business, they know how it's done, they've done it a few times. What if our church decided to take up the mantle of all these young folks that are saying, I want to run a business, and come alongside them and help them prevent the pitfalls that you experienced for the gospel's sake? What would our church look like if we had that type of investment in the generation behind us? How about this one? This is one of the reasons that we actually do this in our kids ministry, but that heartbeat that I just described, this is why we do kids ministry. This is why we do student ministry. We want to put an extra adult in our kids' lives because of this. Statistics and studies show that if parents are the only one that puts a spiritual deposit into someone's life, if you're the only one that does that, the odds of it sticking are incredibly low. They need to have that other adult to actually go into their life on top of what you're giving them. That's the result. That will result in a faith that's actually built. Here's another dream. What if we actually went into our local schools and said something to the effect of this? You know, all those kids that aren't going to come in our doors on a Sunday morning or even on Wednesday night or whatever, what if we said this? Give us those kids that are at risk. And we put an adult in their life. Why is that? Well, statistics show that the odds of them doing drugs, teen pregnancy, and even prison time go down just having another adult in their life. What if we were the church that beat that in our community? Not because we're qualified. I know y'all. Sorry, I didn't mean to sound so harsh with that. But because we just wanted to be obedient. It's not about having the right answer. It's about just sitting around a fire and having faith conversations. I don't know what to do with that. This is what Jesus showed me during a time of pain I didn't know how to process. Wow, that's interesting, because I feel like I'm living in that right now. What if we were that church? What if we approached our community that way? How would it look different? Can you imagine what our church would look like in just a year if only five of us took up that mantle? So here's the thing. God knows what he's talking about with how he designed all the generations. And it's this piece of being unified and integrated into each other. Here's another great story. Robert Morin, he lived simply and frugally. Those that knew him described him as this witty and intellectual and a joy to work with. He drove a 20-year-old car, ate TV dinners at night, and to everyone's surprise, when he passed away, he donated some $4 million to the school that he was at. He wanted to make the biggest difference and ripple that he possibly could in the kids' lives that he got to be around. And he knew the best way to do that was that he could actually do that through a financial investment. And so that's what he did. Many of you in this room have done a similar thing with the next generation in our community through our building that we're looking to do out here. This is a huge, huge deal that you recognize that this isn't a building for us. This is actually a building for the next generation and a tool for them. We don't, just to say it, I don't know if this might be a bad thing to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. We don't need that. It's just a tool. It is a tool to reach our community. Is it going to be nice? Absolutely. But we don't need it. What we need is people saying, I'm going to use that tool. Does that make sense? And some of you might be thinking at this point, it's like, you know what? I reflect on a time. I can reflect back on a time where because there was a space for me or for my kids, they had the opportunity to bump into Jesus. Maybe you're hoping that for your kids. That's why we do that. Sometimes the older generation will make an investment in the younger generation, like Robert, but the Bible also commands that the younger generation invest in the older one. I found this clip this past week of someone doing this. It was pretty cool.
A longtime pizza delivery driver has a new set of wheels thanks to his community. About 6 months ago, Robert Peters, known as Mr. Smiles, started having trouble with his 28-year-old Oldsmobile. He mentioned to a longtime customer, Tanner Langley. Langley jumped into action, starting a GoFundMe campaign, raising money to get a new car. The goal was $12,000, but raised more than $18,000 in just a few days. Last week, Langley surprised Mr. Smiles with a Chevy Malibu.
What the community has done, what Tanner has done, I say, you know, it's just, you know, he's gone far beyond a call of duty, and it means a lot to me that people would do this.
To know that you have a reliable source of food, you know, somebody's willing to bring it to your doorstep, and somebody with the personality that Rob has, it makes your day a lot better.
Sure does. Langley and the community raised so much money. In fact, they were able to cover the car's insurance and registration and gave him a $2,500 tip as well. Come on. You love to see that.
Awesome.
So I bring that up to say this. I don't know the faith background of this scenario, but doesn't this seem like something the church should be shooting towards? Fair? Is that okay to say? So here's the application this week. There isn't one. But I want to leave you with a question. What's your legacy? What are people going to remember you for? Honestly. Let me just leave you with some wise words from King Solomon. This is it. Chapter 12, if you ever read Ecclesiastes, Solomon is noted as one of the wisest men ever to walk the planet. And he spends the first 11 chapters talking about all the woes of life. And it's almost like he comes to this point where he takes all this, like life's hard, life's unfair, all that type of stuff. And he kind of boils it down to, after experiencing all that, this is what I've come to. This is what he says. This is from The Message. Honor and enjoy your Creator while you're still young. Before the years take their toll and your vigor wanes, before your vision dims and the world blurs, and the winter years keep close to the fire. In old age, your body no longer serves you so well. Muscles slacken, grip weakens, joints stiffen, the shades are pulled down on the world. You can't come and go at will anymore. Things grind to a halt. The hum of the household fades away. You're awakened now by birdsong. Hikes in the mountains are the thing of the past. Even a stroll down the road has its terrors. Your hair turns apple blossom white, adorning a fragile and impotent matchstick body. Yes, you're well on your way to your eternal rest, while your friends make plans for your funeral. Life, lovely while it lasts, is soon over. Life as we know it, precious and beautiful, ends. The body is put back into the same ground it came from, and the spirit returns to God who first breathed it. Honor and enjoy your Creator while you're still young. Wisest man on the planet. Might be worth thinking about. Would you pray with me? Father, we just tapped into a big thing that, I'll be honest, Father, I don't really think about that too much because life's so busy and things can speed along so quick, and I don't think about what am I leaving behind, even now. And so, Lord, I think about your church. I think about my friends in the room. And, Lord, I just ask that you would give us clarity of your kingdom coming and not let us get so distracted by the things around us or the moments of work or anything, but that we would actually have clarity in what you're up to in our lives and pointing us towards the things that actually matter. Lord, I pray that our church would be known as that church that rallies around young people and even young people rallying towards generations older than them. Lord, would you give us insight to actually how to find wisdom? For those that have wisdom, Lord, would you give us the humility to actually listen to them? God, would you just work in our midst? And as we contemplate what is our legacy, Father, would you speak to us? Would you speak to us, Father? In your name I pray.